our grandma used to have a plaque on the wall that said, I can only please one person per day. Today is not your day. Tomorrow doesn't look good either. Scotch. Hey, everybody. Welcome to episode 113 of Coffee with Butterscotch, the game dev comedy podcast of Butterscotch Shenanigans. I'm Seth, and I'm the games programmer.
I'm Adam, and I'm the requester of API endpoints.
I'm Sam, and I'm the third leg of the squeaky stool.
And today is August to 8, 2017.
It's very windy.
It's disgusting.
Yes.
Also that.
Before we get started, we have a warning. Anything could happen on this show. There's going to be profanity, pretty much guaranteed. Mm-hmm. If you're a baby, it's fine. If you're a child, get out of here. If you're a teenager, I'm not quite sure. I feel like that's a gray area.
Have to say
are teens allowed to hear profanity? How does this work?
We have to say that you shouldn't listen, but you definitely should.
I think kind of like
especially if you fall into these categories that we're saying you shouldn't listen.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there's kind of that, there's sort of that like that PG-13 area where like you can swear, but you got to keep track, you know, and you got to count
your swears.
Yeah, because it's a well-known phenomenon where if teenagers hear more than like 6 swear words in a 1-hour period, they just become adults.
That's right. Their childhood lost.
Their innocence is destroyed. They feel nothing.
I think some small percentage of them also turn into werewolves.
Yeah. That's true.
Just a rigorous transformation. Yeah,
do you really want to roll those dice?
Swear wolves.
And of course, this is why the hair removal industry is always pushing for more profanity in films.
That's right.
That's true. That is a big lobby.
It's a big lobby. Yeah. All right. So what's going on this past week? First of all, last episode, we talked about the fact that some mystery person sent us 5 pounds of Coca-Cola flavored gummies.
Attached to a
mysterious note. We didn't know who it was.
We also weren't sure if we had eaten all of them.
We did.
We did not.
No. You did not?
Nope, they still exist.
They still exist. They're in the third cubby.
Oh, they got cubbied.
Yeah.
I did my best to eat them all last week, but I was not successful.
And then you hid the remainder in a cubby.
Yep, for this week.
Well, we know who did it. It was Ryan Dolph,
mm-hmm.
who has gotten questions answered on the podcast before. Mm-hmm. So thanks, Ryan Dolph.
Thanks.
For the big sack of gummies.
Yeah.
Also, Sam got a dog.
I did.
Let's talk about this.
All right, so we got this. We went to the pound on Saturday, and Diana, we had a bunch of plans. We've been sort of slowly coming to this idea that we need to get a dog. And by we, I mean Diana. And then she's been telling me that we need to get a dog. And so
we decided. I mean, she told me
it was decided. And so we talked about it a bunch, and I was like, you know what? Yeah, let's do it. Especially if we get the right dog, which is not a puppy, because who's got time for that? Not me. So
if we
get an older dog,
that way also you can swear around it.
True. Yes.
Although, if you just get a puppy and swear at it a bunch, does it turn into
it just
an adult
rapidly
dog?
Ages?
Well, yeah. I think it is like it's like a Benjamin Button sort of scenario. Mm-hmm. Well, I guess probably forward though.
So just regular, just aging.
it's like an opposite Benjamin Button scenario, right?
You know, one of those.
Aging.
So, but yeah. So we've been going to the pound, and so part of our strategy for this was to. In my case, I told Diana, I was like, you know, we got to let's just wait until a few of these other things that we have going on in life are figured out. And so that came down to she was on a trip last week, so she's back, and then she's starting some school stuff. And so everything's kind of in play. And so what we've been doing is just going to the pound basically once a week, and not with the intent
that's
to-
That's pretty frequent.
Just kind of torturing yourselves.
I'm good with it. But so the idea is not to go with the intent to get a dog, but just to essentially interact with a few dogs to see- It's this early stopping problem that we talked about a long time ago. So in other words, this is a sampling process to see enough dogs such that when we see after some certain amount of time, a dog that hits basically all the criteria, that we'll be like, yes. So we've been doing this for a couple of weeks now, and we went into the pound on Saturday, and we had a bunch of plans. We're supposed to go to, there's an international festival in St. Louis, a bunch of great food. We're supposed to go to that, and then we're supposed to go to someone's like housewarming party in the evening. But we go to the pound, and the first little... sort of cubby area they have for the new dogs that come in.
Next to the Coca-Cola gummies.
There's this just adorable little creature, and it's just looking up and he's shaking like a leaf but still very excited and happy. And Diana looked at him and I was like, that's a really cute dog. And of course Diana's just already swept up because it's an adorable dog. So she's like, that's her criteria. She's ready to go. So we get the dog to go play with it and, just a total sweetheart. It's a Cocker Spaniel, full bred, and apparently had just gotten there like 4 hours before we arrived.
Nice.
So the thing is, small dogs essentially always just leave the pound. They get in and leave because they're easier to take care of, generally speaking. And
they can be in apartments.
Exactly. And so all of the dogs that we've been wanting to get are on the smaller side. And so anytime Diana has called after finding one online, the dog is gone. So by the time they post it into the database and then that gets propagated, the dog's gone. And so this is the first time where we were the first ones to find it. We were the people.
You were the ones.
We were the ones
who disappeared the dog.
And so
it does probably, it complicates the optimal stopping problem because now there's this added time pressure.
Mm-hmm. Right. Mm. But so in this case, we'd done this enough and we saw the dog. He doesn't shed, smells great, adorable, fully trained, knows everything already. Turns out he's a bit of a maniac when you put him outside, so we got to work on some leash skills because he probably was just kept in the house.
He's a small skill dog. You got to learn it.
Mm-hmm. So, but we ended up getting him. So his name was Eli, but we were like, nah. So we just call him Yogurt, which is shortened rapidly into Yogi, which is a great name for a dog. So mm-hmm. Yogi's great. Taught him how to go up some.
Have you considered Gert?
We called him Gert, Gert, just all sorts of.
Gurr's pretty good.
Yeah, though. The thing is, we wanted to be able to call him Gurr.
Yeah, so, get a good Vader Zim moment going.
So we put all in there. But yeah, so we got a dog, and he's great, super chilled. He just, Diana left for a class this morning and came back. We just left him in the house, and he was just chilling on the couch. So he's just like an older dog. He's 7. He doesn't give a crap.
He's a good dog.
He's just hanging out.
So I like that. I've got a dog just named after food, which is Coco. Mm-hmm. You got a dog named Yogurt, and Adam's wife wants to get a dog and name it Macaron.
Croissant.
So two French foods packed together. It's a lot of food dogs. Mm-hmm. It's good.
Yep. Good names.
So yeah, congratulations. Yeah, congratulations,
thanks.
Sam.
Thank you.
It's a big life move.
Yeah.
Also, speaking of moves,
Past weekend.
That was a smooth
This past
move.
Weekend. Hey. Mo got a house and moved.
Mm-hmm.
So congrats.
Yeah, she's been in St. Louis now for sort of about six months. So she's been sort of living with family and stuff like that and finally getting settled in St. Louis, which is great. So we had a big butterscotch moving day on the weekend.
Yeah.
Which I got to say, that was the smoothest move op.
It was ridiculous.
We got a full 26-foot U-Haul loaded up, filled to the brim in about 2 hours and fully unpacked in 40 minutes.
That was very fast.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was the best part about it is moving is one of those things that, of course, can be completely infuriating if you're with the wrong people.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
But because it was just the butterscotch crew and then a few of Mo's fam, then we just had like fantastic time. Yeah, just everyone's cracking jokes, just laughing. Eating snacks, laughing a bunch. It was just a really good time. Yeah. So not that I'd want to do it again, but.
it
was enjoyable.
We also had the don't be a hero rule.
Yeah.
Which was violated a few times.
Some people tried to be heroes.
Who was it?
I did at one point. So we packed up quite a bit of the 26 feet of this truck. And then we were looking into the back and realized, we could get much more stuff back there if someone climbed over.
Problem is, it's already half filled.
So like someone has to go in. So they handed me a knife.
It's like those scenes in like horror movies, you know, where like. Yeah.
So I drew the short straw, or I guess volunteered for it, and then they gave me a knife and some twine, which is just like a hilarious
thing.
Still
sounds like a horror movie.
Get back in there and tie some things, things up.
So I did like some Spider-Manning into there, and then they just threw things at me, and I packed them over the stuff, and then I had to climb back out before they trapped me and buried me in various.
Yeah, I remember when I was packing up. I got one of those pods when I moved. I remember packing that thing up, and I was strapping it all down with those, whatever you call those stretchy bungee cable things.
That's what they're called.
Stretchy bungee cables.
Yeah.
And I remember every time I put one on, I was like, I'm going to lose an eye.
Yeah.
Every fucking time. Those are the scariest pieces of thing. But it was, same kind of deal. I was like climbing over stuff and there's like these bungees everywhere. I'm like, oh God, this is
like a Mission Impossible scene or something.
My life.
It's dangerous. But we did it. We survived. And so now Mo's got a cool new house.
Yeah. We met Mo's dad. He's an awesome dude with a Caribbean accent.
Yeah.
And he
calls everyone babies.
He ends most of his sentences with baby. And so at one point,
I was like, get that box in there, baby. That's awesome.
Fuck yeah,
baby. That's amazing.
Yeah, baby.
So that happened.
It was good. It was good.
All right, let's talk about. So we talked about Airtable a little while ago on the podcast and how
it's the gift that keeps on giving,
how awesome it is. Yeah. It's starting to feel like we're sponsored by them. Totally are not, though.
If they're offering,
maybe
we'll take it.
It's not going to change anything, though.
No.
But Adam ended up with an Airtable project this weekend.
Yeah. Well, so when we first started to play with Airtable, the question I always ask every time we start to dive into some new piece of software is, what's the API look like? Right. And I remember looking at it because we were putting together the thing Sam talked about, the DOSI tools that we can keep track of who we're in contact with and stuff. And I opened up their API documentation and I was like, and it was just fucking magic because they actually custom build you an API and they custom document it for your data, for your table, right?
So in other words, all the data is already filled out.
It's already filled out for you. And it's in Node and they give you all the code. So you can literally just copy paste the code for each thing. So they're like how to update a field, right? And then there's your code right there and it already has your fields in it.
So,
I'll do that then.
Yeah,
because
usually when working with an API, there's always that struggle figuring out, okay, what data needs to go in here, what data comes back, what are the arguments?
How do you format it properly?
Yeah, there are all these questions that you have to basically just dig into it and fiddle with it until you can learn it or read really deeply into the generic API documentation to find out. But this was just, like, it just told you how to do everything. It was amazing. And I remember, so I looked at that when we first got it up and I was really pumped about it. So then when Sam was putting stuff together, I was like, this is going to be awesome because if we ever need to automate something,
we
just can.
Yeah.
Airtable.
But we hadn't yet. And then this weekend, my wife on Airtable because she's organizing some of her projects. And then as she was fiddling with it, she was like, oh, this would be a good way for me to actually like archive, make like my own library for all my books because she has an enormous number of books. But they're all just like everywhere and she doesn't even know like what all is there, you know, and all that stuff. But including things like, are they read yet? You know, like all the status stuff that would be really useful to know. Also, she doesn't know what books I have and I don't know what books that she has. So like good family library, right? Mm-hmm. So we started like talking about what that would look like. She started putting one together and at some point got frustrated because she was trying to enter in the data for these books, but it's like a horrible data entry problem, mm-hmm. right? So then she discovered that Airtable has a barcode scanning option, so you can like that can just be a column type.
Airtable.
So if you're on a phone, you can just scan the book or whatever you call those codes, barcodes. ISBN to get the ISBN number. So then you can just like populate the ISBN. And she was doing that, but then still had to fill out all the rest of it, of course. And she was like, "There's got to be some way to not have to do that." And I was like,
"Airtable."
So then I spent the rest of the evening putting together just a simple little Node application that just talks to her database, finds all of the entries that have a code but don't have a name, and then talks to Google's Books API to get all the info, and then adds it to those tables just all automatically in the background. And thanks to Google also, because that API was easy to use, it turned out.
Yeah.
Though they did throttle me at some point, which, you know, hurt my feelings a little bit, but also I understand.
They throttled you.
Your process is too slick. Get out of here.
They told me to turn it down a notch. But yeah, it was really, really slick. So I put that thing together afterwards. I was so pumped about it. I was like, holy shit, we just need to be using this for everything because that means anytime someone's like, you know what would be a little more convenient if I could just automate like this part of this data set I have.
Airtable. Well, this is interesting. It's amazing. You know,
speaking of which, like, if they want to sponsor us, like Airtable, if you're listening,
we'll send them a note after this.
Yeah, I'll take it.
And one of the interesting things about these different tools is if they start having broader applications, and some tools solve what are essentially generic, very high level problems, right?
Right.
So organization is sort of like the key problem for most of everything that we ever do. Sort of, how do you manage all of the data? How do you manage all of your life and everything else? So any tool I've ever used that is just beastly when it comes to a good way to organize your thoughts or whatever else. I mean, workflow is one we've talked about a lot before. But the applications for all these things start getting huge because they work for everything that you do, which is super fun.
And especially if they have APIs that can talk to each other. Which workflow also has an API. I haven't played with that one yet, but
this is all good stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I updated we're using Airtable to manage our content pipeline for the next game. And so I set up a section of the Airtable for Fat Bard where basically there's a bunch of check boxes for things that he can just check for all the different sound effects to fill in. So now he doesn't have to manage a list. I don't have to manage a list. It's just automatically populated.
Yep.
Boom. Problem solved. Cool.
And actually, so if you go to Airtable, we got invited to their university thing. So our Dossi template, a template of the thing that we use to track all of our people, is up on their university thing. So I think is what it's called. So if you do the same thing where you're like, I need to manage all these press contacts, literally the one that we use is up there and it has an example person named Steve in it. So you should be able to do that. Check it out.
Yeah, bear in mind, Steve is imaginary. It's not a real Steve. Don't try to call Steve. Yeah. Just leave Steve alone.
Is there even a phone number column in there?
I don't think so.
Which is why you
definitely shouldn't try to call him.
No, definitely not.
All right, so then the last thing I want to talk about before we get on to some questions, which we have some fantastic questions this week, is there's an interesting problem that comes from building your game off of a pre-existing idea. So I just want to kind of talk about this a little bit.
Okay, yeah.
So we did the Butterscotch Shenana Jam in May, and we made a game called Snuppies, or Snuppy Rustlin'. Mm-hmm. And that game has served as the foundation for the game that we are now working on. We, as of today, we're on version 49.
Which is the same number of versions as before launching and Quadrupus and Talophite.
Right. And every day is a version, right?
Basically every day is a version, unless there's some kind of like major system work happening mm-hmm. where the game doesn't really change. But basically it's a significant change in the game. Right. So it's usually day by day. So we're on version 49, and the game just now... On version 49, I feel like we finally dropped the last bit of holdover design ideas mm-hmm. From the original.
Vestigial organs.
Yeah, sort of like
the appendix.
The appendix mm-hmm. of Snuppy Rustlin' that was keeping this game from being fully realized.
So, would you say it just had appendicitis, basically?
Mm. Yeah. So we just ripped that appendix out. Mm-hmm. But I think this is an interesting. It's an interesting problem to kind of dive into a little bit, because I think this also relates to not just starting with a jam game or whatever, but it relates to even using existing genres of games as a foundational starting point for what your game should be. And as you go through the design process, basically just taking things as they are and incorporating them into your game without actually sort of stepping back one step further mm-hmm. and asking whether or not that's a...
I mean, it's even more general than that, because it's for basically all of design and problem solving.
Right, because you have to start with something.
Yep. Mm-hmm. You can only start with what you know.
Right. And so as you work on things, I think it's really important to constantly ask the question of why a thing is the way it is. Mm-hmm. Even things that seem obvious and seem like it's just a given that a thing is going to be like that.
Yeah, and maybe, I mean, so part of this is maintaining a level of agility when it comes to your thinking about your project is oftentimes very hard to do. People get sort of, you get, you know, narrowly locked in, and then if someone has an idea that might require, for example, a ton of work to actually implement, there's oftentimes a lot of resistance to it. So just a good way to do this is just to have a conversation that essentially goes something like, you know, what would this look like if blah? Because you're not necessarily saying, I think we should do this, right?
Yeah, but the problem with that conversation is usually there's a lot of resistance.
Exactly.
So if you just say,
let's just explore.
This isn't a suggestion. Yeah. It's just an idea. Mm-hmm. Let's figure out what would happen. So what ended up happening with sort of Snuppy Rustlin' versus the current game was with Snuppy Rustlin', the goal was to capture, I think, three Snuppies.
Yeah.
So basically both players had a pile of Snuppies, which were like these snail dogs. Mm-hmm. And you have to capture all three of your opponent's Snuppies. And so the game has since moved on to capturing something else, but it was still the case that each player had three of them, mm-hmm. and the goal was to capture all three. But this led to an interesting problem where, as the game progressed, fewer and fewer things to capture existed, right? Because if you've captured two of your opponent's objects... Mm-hmm. Then there's only one left.
Is there a reason you don't want to give it a name?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Game's still in flux.
Fair enough.
You've captured the objects.
Basically, well, the whole point is that the arc should be that as the game goes on, it gets more and more intense. But what's happening is that as the game went on, it was actually getting less intense. There's sort of a peak in the middle where there's a lot of stuff happening on the board. And then toward the end, it would just sort of like flatline because... Mm-hmm. Nobody could do anything. There was nothing to do because there's only one thing to sort of try to get or try to wrangle. And so as a result, in other words, the total number of options available to a player to consider doing or to worry about actually was going down over time, even though the ability for players to do things was going up.
I guess a good analogy would be if you're watching a football game, if every quarter the football field got like 100 yards longer. So the probability of anybody actually right. scoring just went down over time. Right. So
it's a little boring.
So we kind of looked mm-hmm. at that and we were like, what if there was just infinite of these things? Instead of a limited pile of three of these things, what if we just had infinite of them? The goal is still to capture three. But now anytime one of your little creatures gets to the other side, they snatch up one of these objects and they start running away with it. And so now every single character in the game has a job to do.
And they're a threat.
And they're a threat, right? Where it mm-hmm. used to be once there was only one of these things left to capture, there's nothing to do. Mm-hmm. And this kind of brings me back to like when we're working on Crashlands and we had the inventory problems that we had. And then Adam was like, what if we just didn't
do that?
What if we just didn't have an inventory?
Mm-hmm. So apparently infinity is always the answer so far.
That's a good point. Could be. I mean, design template. Just, could we use infinity?
Yeah. Can we just make this infinite? But yeah, it's really easy to get caught up in those things. So I think if anybody out there who's listening is working on a game project or even just like any kind of project where you're solving interesting problems, it's always a good exercise to step back and evaluate all the different pieces of your solution and ask why that's part of your solution to the problem. So anyways, pretty interesting stuff. Cool. Let's get on some questions. These questions come from podcast.bscotch.net. So if you would like to get your question on the podcast, go there and put it in that text box and then push submit.
Mm-hmm. All right. And also, we know that some of you are having trouble logging in, and I probably could find a way to fix it, but it's just like legacy garbage code right now, and I'm just hoping to replace it soon.
Adam's in the midst of rebuilding. Adam's in the midst of rebuilding everything about our web infrastructure.
So it will someday be awesome. This is not that day.
It's not. Tomorrow's not looking good either.
But you know, give it your best shot though, because we would love to hear your questions.
Our grandma used to have a plaque on the wall that said, "I can only please one person per day. Today is not your day. Tomorrow doesn't look good either." She was a sassy woman. Mm-hmm. All right. First question comes from Upskatningsman.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Mm-hmm.
Hello's. Is your Butterscotch Shenanigans splash screen a video file, or is it somehow programmed in GameMaker? You always seem eager to save space in your games, and that seems like one way to do it. Anyway, that's the way I do it in my own games. Hugs, heart.
That's correct.
It is programming, as is everything in our games.
Yep.
There are no video files.
That video file would probably be the size of the game.
Yep.
So
that's true, actually.
Yeah, Crash Heads is 60 megabytes. So yeah, it's just programmed. Mm-hmm. It's the best way to do it. I don't know why anybody would do it any differently. All right, next question comes from Retro Banana Man NL. I like this question.
He's a
question champ.
Does he need a nickname now? I guess he already is. He's just the unlicensed banana man.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Do you guys count down to the weekend? Hmm. Because at my holiday job, everybody starts on Thursday saying, almost weekend. But how do you guys feel about the weekend? I'm not sure what a holiday job is.
Interesting.
But I guess the question is, are we counting down to the weekends?
I count down to jam day. It's going to be a good one.
So on Friday... which is normally our day off. Tifa came in to the office to work on some other projects and stuff. And we ended up having this interesting conversation where where she was like, "I hate Fridays." And I said, "Why?" And she said, "Because it's the first day of the weekend. And then it's like a 3-day break before we're all working again. And I hate it." And I was like, "So what you're telling me is that Friday now is kind of like what Monday used to be at other jobs,
right.
Where you're not looking forward to waking up on that Friday morning and then not going into work." So I don't know. Does that resonate?
Yeah. I think that's sort of exactly where we're trying to get with all of our work stuff, right? Is craft everything such that you just have really cool stuff to do with really good people. And so coming into the work day is always just very exciting and clear as far as what you're supposed to be doing. So I definitely don't count down to the weekends. Actually, usually what happens is on Thursday, I've started it right after jam day. So we'll wrap up everything by like 8:45 or so as far as all of our discussion. And then I'll actually sit in the office for another probably 30 or 40 minutes and plan out my weekend as far as all of the general stuff I need to do. And then Fridays are my days where I run errands and like sort of take care of life. Mm-hmm. That's like an 8-to-4 sort of scenario. You're going doing some stuff. And sometimes it only takes a few hours, which is cool. But that's sort of my reservation for Friday. And then that way, the whole rest of my week is freed up. Now, the interesting problem that's occurred is, what do I do with that freedom?
Right.
It has raised more questions than it has answered, but in a good way. Like, I feel like it's good slack time for me to be able to think about things. But I don't look forward to it in the sense that I'm looking to be relieved of my duty from the week, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
I'm excited for the change of pace because I think it allows for some reflection time. But I'm not necessarily I'm not excited about it. It's just a different day of the week.
Yeah, it's so free form. I mean, when we're working day to day, we're all doing interesting stuff that we enjoy doing around people we like to be around, right?
Mm-hmm.
And we have structure and we kind of know what's important, know what we should be focusing on. And so it's very easy to just feel awesome about what you did that day. And then Friday, you could easily just fuck it up, right? You could like sleep in by an extra hour or something, and then you get up and you're kind of foggy, and then you're like, what should I do? And then you're like, it's easy to just lose the day kind of slurping around because there's no more
plan.
There's no plan. There's no structure. Like you got to really be, you know, rigorously focused on establishing a sense of structure.
Well, I think this brings us to an interesting point about just the general psychology of work. And there's been lots of studies on this concept called flow, which I think we've talked about a few times on the podcast. And it's also a very common concept in video games in particular, or programming, where the idea is that there's some sort of optimal level of performance between boredom and sort of anxiety, I guess, being overwhelmed, where you're just having a good time and you're 100% of your brain is just dedicated to a thing. And people love being in this state. It's what you get in when you're like programming really hard or working on something or just sort of socializing really effectively. Anything where you're just 100% there. And interestingly, the researcher who did that, Csikszentmihalyi is his name. It's a bit of a mouthful and it's like 70 different letters. But Csikszentmihalyi did this, I can't believe it was him who did this one study where they basically gave people beepers. And then the beeper would randomly go off during the workday or during the day, just the whole day. And when it went off, they had to sort of fill out what's called a general affect. I think it's an affect form of some sort. So essentially measuring what they're feeling. Right.
And also what they were doing at the moment.
Yeah, and then what they were doing. So, and then what they did is they just crunched all this data at the end and just said, when are people happiest? And people just across the spectrum, weirdly, report being happiest when they're working on stuff, but then culturally report not wanting to go to work or like not wanting to be working.
Yeah, this is often cited as sort of a quintessential example of miswanting.
Correct.
Where when people are at work, they're the happiest. But they also, that's the thing they want to do the least.
Yes.
Right. When they go home, they're the least happy. But the thing they don't want to do is go back to work where they are happy.
Right. So a lot of it comes down to figuring out kind of what are we doing on the weekends? Like that's like the weird problem now because you have three of these days. And it used to be that with just the two, it basically wasn't quite enough to like get on top of all your shit, maybe see a friend and you know, do something random and fun. Now with the 3 days, it actually is enough to do that and some more. And so the question is, what is that more?
I wonder if part of that too is because they're basically randomly sampling throughout the day, mm-hmm. right? And they find that on average, presumably or something, you're happier during the workday. Mm-hmm. But what's the variability look like
of
your happiness during the workday versus at home? Because you might be on average less happy at home, but have a tighter variability.
It's also possible that people are just happier in the morning, you know, and they just happen to be at work mornings more frequently.
Yes.
It's, you know, there's a lot of ways you could slice this.
No, but it is true because all of us really love the stuff that we do. Mm-hmm. And I would always much rather look back on whether it's a weekend or no matter when it is, look back on my last 4 hours and be like, man, I crushed that programming problem. Then, man, I nailed that video game. Right.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But every time I'm sitting down to work on something, I'm always like, this seems kind of hard. Maybe I should play video games instead. Mm-hmm. You know?
Well, I think the rule of thumb is always the thing you don't want to be doing is always the thing you definitely should be doing. Mm-hmm. So like you don't want to go to the gym. You should be doing that, right? You don't want to sit down and read a JavaScript book. So you should probably do that. If there's something you really want to do, like eat ice cream, watch Netflix and play video games, those are all things that afterwards you're going to look back and be like, oh shit.
Except butterscotch games, obviously.
Yeah.
Those are deeply fulfilling.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So I think.
Well, I think we had this interesting discussion this morning about because I've basically been looking for another project for the weekends. Like I want some more work to do on the weekends. It's not actually that's not so thoroughly related to the game and the general business production stuff that we do during the week. Because I have somewhere between like 4 and 6 hours during the weekend where I could do basically anything, and sometimes I just fill it up with video games or with sort of like an extra session with friends or whatever else, but I think what I actually need is just like some more fun, interesting thing to work on.
Yeah, the way that I view weekends is basically the way I have the exact same list of priorities all the time. I just change their relative ranking depending on context and what day of the week it is, right? So during the normal Monday through Thursday work week, it's purely like at the very top, you know, right underneath, making sure my life doesn't fall apart is butterscotch stuff that's high leverage that moves the company forward as aggressively as possible. I use my Friday through Sunday to sort of reshuffle priorities where now some like, you know, life and home and social stuff now gets bumped up. But, and then the high leverage butterscotch stuff, like if there's something I need to do, then that, you know, also gets priority. But otherwise, I flip that too. And now I look at the weird
like R&D, right?
It's like R&D and like, and weird, interesting stuff that I have no idea if it's even worth doing. But I use the sort of the context, like now it's the weekend. I use that as sort of the excuse that lets me feel comfortable not doing a really high leverage.
Burning that time in case it doesn't pay off.
Right. It's more exploratory work, I think.
Yeah, it's exploratory. It's like, so this weekend I spent all of it doing a whole bunch of like preliminary data analysis for an article I want to write about games publishing. Mm-hmm. And it took me a little bit to get into it on Friday. Like I knew I wanted to do it, you know, but it took me a little bit of time to get hooked. But then I was hooked for the whole weekend, just like plowing through. Like the whole time I was doing it, I was like, I have no idea if this is worth doing. There were a few times where I almost gave up on it because it looked like it was going nowhere after like, you know, after about 8 hours in. So I was ready just to burn 8 hours and be completely okay with it.
Because what else were you going to do with this?
Because what else was I going to do with it? All right. But it is tricky. And I think it requires going in knowing ahead of time where your priorities are and what you feel comfortable having them be so that you get to look back on that time afterwards and not feel like it was misspent. I think there's a danger that we have, and certainly that I've faced for a long time, of any time I wasn't doing the most high leverage thing for butterscotch, I would think that was wasted time. Mm-hmm. And I think that's kind of what work-life balance has become is basically there's at work.
It allows you to invert the.
And there's outside of work. Right. Right. And I get to invert the relative priority of those in a way where I can kind of chase interesting, fanciful things related to it outside of the office.
But in a cool way, that exploratory stuff, it always comes back.
Oh yeah. No, it's actually high value.
It always comes back to your day-to-day work anyways.
Yep, absolutely.
So. As long as you're learning or doing something interesting or whatever. It doesn't even have to be the entire weekend. Just, you know.
No, just not. Yeah.
Just something. Well, I don't know. Weekends are complicated and messy, and I hate them. Next question comes from The Rumpus. Hey, dudes. Eh. Recently became a listener and a huge fan of everything you guys do, especially Crash Ends of the Podcast. Thanks. That was me saying thanks. Mm-hmm. Do you guys plan on doing any more bundles with source code for your games? I missed my chance during the last Humble Bundle. Sad face.
Mm.
Dang.
We would like to. We have to kind of get invited to those.
Yeah.
So, and actually, we put a bunch of our jam games in to this latest Humble Bundle and the one before that, mm-hmm. the last year. But that means those games have all gone through two bundles. And those are for Game Maker Studio, which is not going to be around a lot longer.
It's going through 2018, which means they're definitely not doing this bundle next year.
They're not. They
unless they're out of
their
minds.
I would assume. Right. So that would mean that whatever comes next, we would have to send some Game Maker Studio 2 stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And it'd be cool, but it would also mean we'd probably need to make some stuff for it from scratch because of the fact that we have now just a lot of sort of proprietary, super secret tech that we've built into Game Maker Studio.
It's all sort of like Iron Man Jarvis.
Very Jarvis-y.
Yeah.
And we don't want Jarvis to get out because that's how
you get Ultron.
That's how you get Ultron. Right. So, I guess it kind of depends. If we get invited to do it, then we'll have to figure out, you know, what to do. We may just do a gem and just, you know, pump something out. But that is something we'd like to do. Another option would be for us to actually just sell source code directly, which we've never even considered or talked about until this exact moment.
Yeah.
So
we could do that.
We could do that.
Can you just sell source code on the Yo-Yo Marketplace? Is that a thing?
Oh yeah, you can.
I guess
we could just do that.
Yeah, because the question is like, where is the platform we could go to sell that kind of stuff?
Well, I don't want to have to do it ourselves. It sounds like a pain in the butt.
No, and then there aren't enough people who would know that we were doing it for it to matter.
Yeah, so we could totally do that.
Let's just do that.
Okay, cool. Right, good idea.
Good idea, The Rumpus.
Thanks.
All right. Next question comes from Anonymous. Will you consider switching from Game Maker to a more advanced engine in the future?
This is a loaded question.
Yeah. So this is...
I assume by advanced you mean 3D.
Advanced means 3D. Because I'm going to be honest, I don't think there is a more advanced 2D engine.
Nope.
I don't think...
I have no idea. We would have to have used them all to really know, you know, because there's some pretty good ones.
My gauge is so far there's literally been nothing that I've wanted to do in 2D that I couldn't do in Game Maker.
Yeah,
yeah, unless it was some version of 3D.
Right.
There have been
like converting the 2D image into a 3D mesh and then manipulating it or something.
there have been things that I wanted to do, which are just much more about programming, like have things that don't have to be global or have objects that I don't have to track and destroy them independently while not accidentally also destroying something else because.
Yeah, I'm not, I'm talking about stuff the player cares about.
Right.
Well, no, that's the question though. Because we solve those problems.
Yeah, yeah. Well,
more or less.
I'm not sure. Yeah, functional. Right. but it is an important question when it comes to what do you mean by what are these advanced?
No, a more advanced, more advanced. Yeah,
it depends on what you mean by that, right? Because it is definitely true that like Game Maker as a language is not modern in the sense that like languages are now, right?
Right.
Versus C sharp and stuff that's used in other things, and I would say it's inarguable that GameMaker's got some kind of backward shit going on with its language. Mm-hmm. But it is all stuff that can be worked around if that's like the environment that you live in. And in terms of speed and getting stuff done and for making 2D stuff, despite all those sort of weird traits it has, you can still do anything.
Yep.
And if that's the environment that you become an expert programmer in, then you can just definitely do anything and it's fine. I know for me, because most of my time is spent in other languages. Right now, it's all JavaScript, basically. Before that, it was like PHP and Python and stuff. And so for me, every time I use GameMaker, it makes me a little upset because of some of these particular kinds of coding properties, right?
But
again, I can manage it.
And they are making great strides on their IDE and everything.
They are.
Like that,
and they do have on their... I'm super excited about a few key things in the roadmap that if they actually get those implemented... they don't have any timelines on them, but right. if they get those implemented, it's actually going to fix a handful of the major, major problems that GameMaker as a language has. And I mean, it's a small team, they do good work. And I think the engine itself, it just continues to get better, mm-hmm. which I think all just on the whole is like what we would ask for, you know, is like it solves all the problems that we need to have solved. Some things are more pain in the ass than we would like, but most of them are less of a pain in the ass than they would otherwise be.
And if we switched to 3D, yeah, we would not be using GameMaker because that would be crazy.
Mm-hmm. Though people have done this.
People have done this. I don't know why they have done this. I can't believe that they've done this. So, yeah, I don't know. That's about it. GameMaker's fantastic. I highly recommend for 2D, but not for 3D. All right. Next question comes from Skogust. In a previous podcast, you gents discussed how you hated crafting games. And so in Crashlands, you basically just omitted the parts of crafting you disliked. Can you talk more about this? What are the good and bad parts of crafting games? This question kind of pops up in and out.
Mm-hmm.
So first of all, I would say we don't necessarily hate crafting games.
We just despise them with a deep...
Just a deep, passion. Seething sort of loathing.
Mm-hmm.
No, that's not... No, it's actually... It's more like... I think that historically crafting games have a really compelling... sort of baseline concept that really speaks to people, which is sort of like just starting from nothing and kind of MacGyvering your way to the top,
yep. right?
Which is super cool. But they, because of their nature of dealing with lots and lots of different items and stuff, they have a tendency to have really cumbersome means of interaction.
Well, I think the best way to think about it is, we've talked about this before, about the idea of metawork. So metawork is the work you have to do in order to be able to do your work. So if you're a normal person, that means like having a calendar and maintaining it, you know, like texting your friends to figure out a time to hang out. It's not doing the hangout. That's sort of getting things ready to do it.
If you're an abnormal person, it's tracking all your abs.
Exactly. You know, mm-hmm. Make sure they're normal.
Making sure they're not
so
running away.
In crafting games tradition, I think the thing that all of us have always reacted to very poorly is they tend to have just a lot of this meta work stuff. And actually it ramps up similar to this problem we were talking about with Snuppies.
Yeah, as it grows over time.
As the game gets further along, this problem actually just starts exploding. So
now you've got like chests with labels and you got to keep track of everything.
Yeah. And if someone new comes in, they're like, oh, do you have this piece of copper? And you're like, oh, yeah, it's on the fourth chest from right and the second slot.
Yeah, I know.
You're doing more mental work to keep like a chest organized in Terraria than you would do to like plan your weekend, for example.
Yeah. When Jen and I were playing a lot of Terraria, one of the home bases we built is basically just like this giant warehouse of just, it was like probably 15 columns by like 5 rows, right? Mm-hmm. Of chests that we're just storing shit inside of, because like that's how much stuff we accumulated over all of our.
Well, and it drove me crazy. You know? So we played Portal Knights.
Yeah.
And it was driving me crazy was I'd be like, oh yeah, I'm going to go get some stuff. And I'd go and I would like kill an enemy or something. Something cool pops out. I'm like, I'm going to go grab that. And then I walk up to it, nothing happens. Like, what? Oh, right. I open up my inventory. Hi, let me look through this. Let me look through this pile of shit.
And then I'm not gonna get rid of
what I gotta get rid of. Like, I don't know what this is. Like, maybe. I think
the other funny thing about that is, in most crafting games, you have no idea what things are used for. Uh-huh. And so I've had it happen. Know. Yeah, I've had it happen actually in Terraria a bunch. Where the first couple of times I played, I would see some stuff that I had in my inventory that I was like, I don't know what the fuck this is. Throw it out. And then, like, literally 20 minutes later, I'd be like, oh, that's a super rare thing. right. I did not know this. And so. So I think
you have to have the wiki open at all times. They can look up all the things that you find and see if they're worth anything.
And so I think there's, you know, when it comes to sort of the big problem I have, I think all of us actually just have with crafting games, it's actually just that. Like, the rest of the crafting game idea, I think, is wonderful.
Well,
like,
there's the other extra layer, which is the way most crafting games handle tools.
Well, it's because they take up inventory.
Right.
It's the same problem.
Tools take up inventory space, and you have to put them onto a hotbar and then switch to that tool. When, like, for example, you have an axe, and because of the way the game is set up, the only thing that's good for is chopping wood.
Yep.
Right?
Well, the Terraria has done a good job of addressing most of that.
Yes.
Yeah. You just hold the shift key for some reason, because they could just have four more fucking slots for your tools. Mm-hmm.
Because, yeah, you still got to have the tool in your inventory and then move it to your hotbar.
They didn't fully solve it, but at least now you can, you know, click.
Oh, yeah, they made it much easier, but I think the interesting thing is that
they have legacy systems they're dealing with.
Yeah, you look at the amount of dev and interesting, like, sorting mechanics that they've added. Like, in Terraria's case, you can be near chests, and there's a button next to your inventory you can hit that'll auto suck everything out of your bag into the relevant chests where there's already that thing.
Like, okay, so basically what they've done is they've allowed you to have infinite inventory.
Provided
you build a lot of chests and organize it first.
It's right. infinite inventory that is spatially organized.
Yeah.
Is basically what it is.
Yeah.
And how many kinds of fucking things do they have in that game?
Well, there's so many.
They've got way more than we have in Crash Lands.
Yeah. So I think that's, you know, a lot of these games, and then, you know, we talk about in Snuppy's case. Snuppy's, the original design comes from us being like, we kind of hate card games. So why? We don't know why. We just kind of hate them.
Let's make one and then figure out why we hate the thing we just made and then,
not do that.
But this goes back to the iteration thing you were talking about earlier as far as being agile with your design process, because Crashlands had an inventory for the first, like, year?
Yeah.
9 months or a year?
The first, like, third of its development, it was very much a carbon copy crafting game.
Yeah. And we just kept on adding slots until we had over 80 slots. And then that still felt bad.
And we did all the efforts of, we made chests, we made auto-sorting mechanisms, we made all these ridiculous things.
Yeah, the comical thing is the chests that you go and destroy in Crashlands that you just, like, pop open,
used to be
the chests you had to build to store all your shit in.
Yeah.
Reduce, reuse, recycle.
Yeah. So I think, I don't know what it is.
Actually, is there still an open version of those chests?
There might
be. In the game?
Well, so actually, just because it opened the UI, then we never drew an animated sprite for it, because who cares?
Yeah, because who even cares?
Nobody does.
We'll figure out with the card game.
So again, it's all about people. There's holdover ideas from existing genres, and people just take them, they copy them, and paste them into a new game. Whether it makes sense or not, whether it makes the game better or not, nobody just says, why are we doing this? Can we not do this? So that's why. Our next question comes from
not.
Bam. Hmm. BAMHM 182. BAM 182. You mentioned the demons you create from time to time. What do you use to host these? Do you have an internal server, or is it something like Amazon AWS? Do you use collaboration tools like GitHub, or do you house your own? Like GitLab, Adam.
We use Amazon AWS. We're migrating everything to that, and all our new stuff is on that. It's phenomenal because it's a huge pain in the ass to figure out how to actually use it. Mm-hmm. But once you do, it's amazing because then you don't have to worry about stuff. You just make, you're like, oh, I need another computer. And then 2 seconds later,
Amazon, make me a computer. Yep.
You're like, oh, I need to put some Docker container on it.
But, Amazon, make me a Docker container. Right.
So, and Amazon also has a Docker container hosting. So, which is like Docker Hub, only private, right? So we use that because that way all these services are stuck together. So as much as possible, I'm putting all of our stuff in the Amazon basket, because it also means they all live in the same data warehouses. So then your costs are reduced when you're having things talk to each other and all this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And if they want to spawn each other and do that, Amazon is continuously adding new tech that allows you to automate a lot of that stuff. So for making, you know, fleets of robots and really any cloud host, so like Google Cloud has this and Microsoft has this, they all offer kinds of different products. So I don't know what the other ones have these days. But in principle, they all are awesome and do the same kind of stuff. So we do that. And then for Git, we use Bitbucket because we want everything to be private. And GitHub is public by default, and you have to pay for privacy. Mm-hmm. And you actually pay, I can't remember the, you pay per project or something, something really wonky.
Something like that.
Yeah. So, so basically, GitHub and Bitbucket are effectively the same, right? They're just hosts.
I think they're inverted.
But they're basically inverted in their payment structure. And so if you're a small company with a small team bootstrapping, you can basically do have infinite private repos with infinite space completely for free with like up to five people.
I think it was Bitbucket. You pay for each user on your team.
Yeah. Bitbucket is per user, but after
with
five.
Unlimited projects.
Right.
And after on GitHub, I believe it's you pay for projects, but unlimited users.
Right.
Something like that.
Yeah.
Don't quote me on that. Might have made that up.
And they might have also changed this because this was like 4 years ago when we set that up. But yeah, so we always are focusing on bootstrapping as much as possible. So that means find the stuff that is going to be sometimes more of a headache to get started with, but that once we're started, will be really cheap to maintain and will be as future-proof as possible. So we had to go back and change everything.
So Bitbucket, Amazon, but yeah, pretty much those.
Yeah, but if you're looking for other stuff, like Heroku is also pretty good for bootstrapping and for making robots.
And strapping boots.
Here's a question. If Amazon is where all the demons come from, is it actually hell?
In some ways, yeah.
Well, no, I mean, yeah, I guess, yeah.
Hell is in the cloud.
Yep.
It's a hell cloud. That expression comes from the Easterling.
And you, when you're reading their documentation, you will feel like you're in hell.
Because that's where it comes from. All right, the Easterling says, you guys have mentioned that your animation is done through coding movable parts instead of using sprite sheets that have animations already baked in. Mm. Can you talk about that process and why you have chosen to use that method? You're the best. So the reason we do that is just texture space. If we have something that's going to run around instead of doing a 16-frame walk cycle where we recreate that image every time, we just have no frames.
You just rip its legs off.
You just have no
Because this also gives us flexibility where if we go, oh yeah, we feel like its leg should look slightly different. Now we just change it once.
Or the thing should curl up into a ball and do flips.
Yeah. Then we just,
no new assets
we just fold it with code. So the way you do it is...
Which I think you can see Flux do in the when she goes and grabs her...
the tools.
Her tool upgrades.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
She comes flipping in. That's all of it is exactly the same stuff.
Right? Just the same pieces, just oriented differently. Mm-hmm. Pretty good.
no one was like, hey, that doesn't look like a flip.
Yep.
Who cares?
Like, we flip the character. What do you want? That's what a flip is. So the way you do it is, I'm just going to be very high level, which is basically... in code, you just figure out the distances and directions from one body part to another. So if you say the center of the body is like where your sternum is, for example, then where is your shoulder relative to your sternum? And maybe it's like one shoulder is 45 degrees and like 20 pixels away, right? And so then whenever you rotate the body, so let's say you rotated the body by 90 degrees. Well, that means the shoulder is now... 90 plus 45 degrees because it inherits the rotation of the body. So you just kind of do this sort of cascading rotation and then you keep things the same distance apart as they normally would be.
So people's arms don't pop off.
So your arms, so like your body doesn't rotate while your arms stay in the same place. And then you just, that's all you do. It's all about just, it's all about directional and distance relationships between body parts.
And it's going to be confusing as fuck when you start doing it. Like so confusing.
Fair warning.
It's going to make your brain hurt, but it's a thing that you can, you'll adapt to and become, it'll become quite intuitive actually.
So yeah. I mean,
you just
got to
start doing it and just know it's going to be real hard and suck a lot when it starts, just push through it and work at it.
Yeah. I mean, if only some game studio that uses GameMaker would take their code library for a skeletal animation and sell it on the Yo-Yo Games asset store.
If only that was a thing.
Gosh, you know, that would be super helpful to basically everybody.
Coming soon.
Maybe. all right.
Wait, speaking of which, did we ever get that to work aggressively enough with all the computational requirements and stuff?
It's definitely beefy, but we are making it do a lot of things.
Okay. So now,
yeah, in our current game, our animation code library is, I think each creature is like 9 different bones, and then we have like 15 creatures on the board at once. It's a lot of draw calls. It's a lot of computation. You can definitely go overboard with with code-based skeletal animation, which we are definitely doing. So, all right. Next question comes from Marmadukian. Is it really a selfless act, even if you feel good after doing it?
I have a better question. Does it matter?
You mean, should we even be asking that question?
Yeah, like, why does something need to be selfless?
Well, I think the real question is selfless even a thing?
And even if it was, would it be good? Would it be something to strive for?
Well, that's an interesting question. Once again, challenging the baseline, right?
So what do you mean by a selfless act? So let's say...
You just go, I'm just going to just like give all of my life savings to some random person who's struggling or something.
So if you did that...
And then go live on the street.
Okay.
All right. And then feel really terrible about it.
Okay, maybe it's bad.
No, I'm trying to get to the point where it's actually purely selfless by this definition. Or by this,
well, let's
hit the question.
Right? Take the opposite one. Let's say
opposite of this?
Let's say you're Bill Gates, right? Uh-huh. You got like $1 billion.
Billion?
Billions of billions.
Billion Gates.
You're like, I'm gonna pick a person and I'm just going to give them a shitload of money. So they're having some struggles. Boom. Now you have no financial struggle anymore, right? So you have been harmed literally none by this.
Yeah.
The other person's been helped quite a bit.
Uh-huh. Yep. You so far?
Okay. So.
Well, I think maybe that is a selfless act. And here's why.
What?
Here's why. Because if Bill Gates gave somebody $1 million, it's as if he didn't from his perspective. Mm-hmm. Right? Because he has so much money that he wouldn't notice if $1 million went missing.
Okay.
Right? It totally benefits the other person. So the reason it's selfless for him is that his self is completely not impacted by this situation whatsoever.
Nor could it be impacted by any positive gains from a situation.
Exactly. So his
except with all the good press you get about it.
But what is it going to do?
But again,
it's going to make him feel good. You're talking as if the only thing that matters is the financial reward, which can't possibly be true.
Well, no, I'm saying what would it matter for him? Good press, bad press, $1 million, not $1 million.
Well, can you read the question again?
Is it really a selfless act, even if you feel good after doing it?
Does feeling good, I guess, what?
Well, so the
question is why you're doing it.
Wait,
what they're getting at is the why.
Definitions. What is selfless mean? Is it that you have absolute disregard for your own self while doing a thing?
I think it has to.
Is it possible for a human to even do that? Right, because maybe this was kind of getting at a little bit, which is, it's just the case that by nature of our evolution, generally speaking, if you help someone, you feel good. This is a human thing.
Yeah, there's gonna be a spectrum. Right?
So is this not just like a physics thing?
I think here's the real problem.
Yeah, you
know, like conservation of energy.
It's sort of a universal law.
We're talking about this as if being selfless is binary, right?
Mm-hmm.
Either you're completely selfless. Boom, right? You had complete disregard for yourself, or you're not selfless, where in that scenario, you even a very tiny bit considered your own benefit from a thing, okay. Right? Mm-hmm. Maybe the way to think about it is if you just thought about other people more than what you thought about yourself.
This is too much because, nuance. I think I'd
no,
prefer
because
more
this
black
is,
and white.
Because this is where the less part comes in, right? It's not... It's not like
it's
zero.
About self-reduced.
It's about thinking about yourself less than you thought about somebody else.
Now, I think this is all bullshit.
Self-less.
Because you should just think about other people more.
Other more.
You can think about,
It's an other more act.
Because you can think about yourself, just whatever. It doesn't
it's
fucking matter.
It's a good
matter.
Point, because who gives a fuck?
Because this isn't a zero-sum game. Like, what the
right.
hell?
So it should be other more.
It's an other more act.
I'm going to do this other more act. So for example... One of my favorite things to do sometimes if I'm just feeling sassy or down, I'll go to the Starbucks near my place and I'll go through the drive-thru and then I'll pay for my shit and the person behind me. Right? Because oftentimes that person then pays for something behind them. So the thing is, everyone's actually still paying the same amount of money except for me. So you just kick off the chain and then everyone's basically paying the same amount as they would because most people get the same shit.
Except for the last person's getting something for free.
Exactly.
And then they just drive off going, hey, hey.
but everyone feels good. While they're doing that whole chain, right? Because they're like, oh, yes, someone did this for me. I'm going to do it for someone else.
And of course you get some satisfaction out of that.
I get a lot of satisfaction out of
that. That's why you do it.
But exactly. So the question is, I think it's...
It can just be both.
I think other more is probably a better framing.
Yeah.
Because, like, it's who gives a fuck if I am being selfless? Like, that's not even the point, right?
It's not... But it, I guess another question is, why do you need to measure it? Why does it have to be... Why does it have to be other people more than you?
No, no. Just more than not.
What about just people? Like thinking about... What about just caring about other people? Just...
This is still too much nuance again.
I mean, like, so if you say, hey, when you make a decision, do you at least think about other people?
And also, you know? Do you think about yourself so that you don't end up destitute from having given away all your money?
Okay, here's what I would. So I was at Walgreens the other day, and some woman dropped something. We were both in line. She dropped something, and I picked it up and gave it to her. And she's like, that was very nice of you. And I was like, what? Yeah. I just pick something
it's
up.
It's probably because usually people pick it up and they throw it across the store.
And they go, think fast.
So following this other more paradigm shift, is it?
But it's not other more.
But
it's,
it is.
No, because.
Than average.
Average. Because they define expectations.
Because here's the thing. Exactly. You just bent over.
Yeah, but most people won't even bend over.
That's what I'm saying. So that's it is other more.
This person's experience, most other people.
I think it has to be relative to a baseline. It's just like the Starbucks thing. Like,
yeah, but
if no one does that.
But then... the baseline is people who just are kind of dicks, is what you're saying.
No,
I think. Like,
so we can boil it down to don't be a dick.
Don't be a dick.
And also not to yourself. Just don't be a dick.
I think the other.
Well, you need to think about yourself.
Otherwise you die.
Otherwise you die or terrible things happen to you.
Well, also the truth is like it. You can't do, so the example of doing a selfless thing acts as if, like the idea of selflessness acts as if you are an island. Because the truth is like, say, so Adam, say you're like, I'm just going to give all my money away. Well, you know.
Now the state has to support me because I'm homeless.
Yeah.
Somebody's got to keep you alive.
We got to, you know, keep your emotional wits about you. You're causing all sorts of trauma for us on the back end.
You're
going to
be crashing on our couches probably.
So.
Adam.
So the other weird thing to me about the selflessness thing is it doesn't ever consider oftentimes the reality of the connected state of everybody.
Mm-hmm. True. Right? You do have a certain minimum amount of self-care that has to be administered.
Right. So
or else somebody else is going to administer it.
Yeah. Forcefully. So yeah, so but that's why I do think the other more approach is actually just a good one because for whatever reason, it just seems like it neatly solves some of these thinking conundrums regarding
but
the selflessness.
There's another problem, which is the, you know, treating selflessness, sort of like the idea of, you know, of
putting others first
is something that is only certain people can afford to do.
Yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it'd be privileged as fuck to be able to do
that.
Yeah.
Like you got to have all your shit taken care of before you can start. Just like taking time or money and sending that in other people's direction.
Which
to try
really
to make
means
their
taking
better.
Care of yourself is actually taking care of other people.
Exactly.
So would you say taking care of yourself is selfless?
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. And selfish.
Because maybe because of the interconnected nature of the universe.
We're all just
atoms in a giant cosmic boulder, you know?
All right, well, I want to hear people's... I want a challenge for this week. This would be fun. Let's do a challenge. We haven't done a challenge.
Challenge. What's the challenge?
What is it?
I want to do the other more challenge.
Mm.
Just...
Well, we need to define it clearly, though, before we just throw that
just
challenge
do
out
something.
There.
Just do something nice for someone?
Yeah. Where you think about other people more than you usually would.
Do. Yeah.
Not more than yourself. Correct. Necessarily.
Right. Exactly. That's
just more than you usually do.
I think you're right. I think the
just
idea
think
that
about other people more.
Well, I think the idea with selflessness that you have to like put down yourself in order to think about others more
to the
is
point
a
where
false,
you cease to exist.
Yeah, that's a false.
So actually, I'm gonna extend this.
Though. All right, other more me.
It's gonna be other more and self more, which is
oh yeah. Take okay. better care of yourself.
Take better
too.
Care of yourself and other people.
Whoa.
Yeah. And then, so what are you going to do? So the challenge this week is do something for yourself that takes good care of you mm-hmm. that you normally wouldn't have done.
Right. Yep. And then do that for somebody else.
And then
else
do something for somebody else too.
And also going to be like, holy shit, this is what being a good person is.
It's incredible.
But probably, of course, all of our dear listeners.
Well, no, it's not
that.
About being a good person. It's about being a better person.
It's being a more person.
It's being more person.
Mm-hmm. This is the more person challenge.
All right, let's do it.
The more
the challenge has been issued.
All right, more person challenge. Do it. Put a question, in the podcast
or
form.
Tweet at us.
Tweet it. Something.
Is somebody reading our Twitter now?
I am.
Okay. I'm sure other people are reading it. all right. Well, that's all the time we have for this week. We'd like to thank our studio wrangler, Monique, for putting this episode together. Our producer, Fat Bard, for making us sound amazing. And the Beastgotch dev team, Andy, Tifa, and Cher, for continuing to build stuff while we're in here doing the podcast. Special thanks to our community moderators who keep our Discord and forums running. And, of course, we'd like to thank our listeners for coming back every week to listen to us talk about all kinds of crazy stuff. If you'd like to get more involved in the Butterscotch community, hop into our Discord server at bit.ly/BSDiscord. Say hello. We had a bunch of people pop in this past week from that link. It was fantastic.
Yeah. Oh, shit, I didn't actually...
Whoops. It's all right. I got your back. Okay, cool. Also, we have a mailbox, so if you'd like to send us 5 pounds Coca-Cola gummies, 5 pound gummy bear.
We got plenty of both of those.
5 pounds of Rice Krispies.
We don't have that anymore.
5 pounds of Reese's.
Don't have that anymore.
Basically,
that one was a particularly good five pounder. Or something.
Basically candy by the 5 pounds. If you want to send us any of that.
We're basically surveying all of the candies that come in 5 pound increments.
That's true. You know?
That's become our existence. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
We'll be experts soon.
We ordered 5 pounds of mini eggs just for ourselves last week.
Oh yeah. And
disappeared
too fast.
Real quick. Also,
mini eggs are still good.
As we discussed last week, we're in the midst of a review drive. We are starting to promote the podcast and we're racing toward 100 reviews
we're driving a car around and we're just like rolling down the window and yelling at
just
people.
Just screaming at people until they review us.
Yeah. We now have 50 on the United States store. And I'm pretty sure I got emails from a bunch of people who are in Germany and Canada and a few other places. So thanks to everybody who's already done it. And if you have it,
weren't we supposed to read some?
Go do it. We'll do it in the next coming weeks. Yeah.
Okay, cool.
Yeah. And this is on, this is for Apple Podcasts specifically. Which I believe was iTunes. Now it's Apple Podcasts.
Yeah. Whatever. Go to bit.ly/CWBApple to go review.
CWBApple.
CWBApple. Leave us 5 stars. And that's going to be super helpful for us. So we appreciate it in advance.
Yes.
Yeah. All right. Thank you all for listening. And we'll see you next week.
Bye.